I'm going to make sure you can hear me okay. I'd like to start with a short meditation. And then when I shift to the time of the Dharma talk or dialogue, if you can't see well and you want to come around here, feel free. But you probably want to be more comfortable for the meditation. Okay. So just to meet yourself briefly, how is the state, body and mind? And what if there's nothing wrong, even if you feel upset or nervous or uncomfortable? And what if there's nothing right, even if you feel happy or peaceful, at home or still? What if it's not right and wrong? What if it doesn't answer any question? Or even mean anything about you? And we can also just feel what it is. Sometimes at the beginning of a retreat, there just is a lot of energy. And whether that shows up in the body or mind, whether that expresses in a feeling of what feels like anxiety, tension, or a high, or a hiding, just leaving some room for the possibility that as we enter into the state of retreat, or retreat country, we can say. Sometimes there's just high energy, there's just more energy. And we can also feel it. And just to invite the body to be at home on earth. One of my favorite images and instructions for body posture is if we have a bundle of grass, so some grass or hay that's been harvested and tied together and put somewhere. And then we untie it. Or a big bag, heavy bag of grain that's tied closed, and we untie it. Open the bag, let it spill on the ground. Just letting the body kind of spill on the ground, spread out a little bit. Take up some space and sink into the ground a little bit. We can also let the mind be a little more freely, loosely here. Not in charge. Not allowed or encouraged to take over or to be right, but allowed. Certainly. Who knows where it comes from, all of that thinking. Sinking down towards the lower belly or the contact with the ground or both. Far away from the head. Still, what if no matter what's happening is not right and not wrong? It's just happening. And also we can feel it. Just for a while, just being here with no demand on you. Just getting to know yourself, feeling where could you rest into? Is it a place in the body? Maybe the lower belly or the contact with the ground. Maybe the back or the feet or the chest. Feeling for somewhere that feels maybe a little open or good or neutral, easy to feel or possible to feel. As if somewhere you could rest your head figuratively. And if it happens that the way your mind works, you really don't feel the body, no problem. Just starting to feel for the deep wish in this life. What do you know is important? Where's the juice? What is it that you love in what you love? And just to play with resting the head in that deep wish. In a deep wish, we say, I wish for peace or joy or stillness or liberation. Transparency. We say it as I wish for, but really somehow life gave it into us. It comes before me, in me, through me. And maybe it's helpful if there's a word that helps you resonate with the deep wish, so it's not too abstract, too easy to float away. If it's possible and or easy to feel your body, you could also play with feeling the deep wish. And when you connect to that, what do you feel and where in the body? When you're allowed to tune into the feeling of being at home or beloved or free. Or whatever you love. Whatever is that love built into you by life, not as a program. Deeper than your name. For now, I'm not stretching the mind to figure out what it is, but just feeling or smelling it, tasting it. And then if you can feel the body well or well enough, a little bit. So for now, just the simplicity of one place in the body. Resting, letting the body kind of spill out. and allowing the feeling of that body place or deep wish to keep coming up by itself. And notice our tendency to kind of make it, to make an image of it, instead of backing off, resting, opening out, and allowing, okay, lower belly still keeps showing up, bubbling up, feeling itself. Getting out of the way and letting it bubble up. Now and now. Are there any questions so far?
What to do with the ego? That is a big question.
She says, what to do with the ego? Maybe it's a big question.
Big ego.
That is an interesting question. Can you give some context? And yeah, you said she is resting also. The ego is resting also. Okay. But I'm curious to know.
Just noticed that I'm trying not to look specifically on the breath, or the, just, as you said, just to be. Hmm. And then if I get a thought, I go back to my breath. But for the time, like if it's thought, if it's feeling, even if it's sensation, it's always connected to the I. So it's my.
Okay. Okay. So let me say what you said, if I can. She heard me as suggesting just be, and so it sounds like your normal practice is with breathing in terms of settling in, so by feeling the breath. So she was saying she was just playing just to be here, and then if the thoughts were getting more loud, she would come to the breath. But then she's saying, but any experience, so any perception or thought or experience, it seems to her, is always connected to the I. So if there's a sensation in the belly, she feels like then it's my sensation. Is that close enough? I think this would be rather if we make an exploration, put a question mark at the end of the statement. Or even make it a... almost a pushy question. So, what makes it mine? Or we can say, why in the world would I think of it as mine? You can think of all the reasons that it's not mine. And that can help, thinking, it can help start to let the experience teach us. It could be in the experience of my sensation or my anger or my feeling of weight or heat or light or coolness. That it looks like one thing. It looks like that my heat is one thing. That maybe it's two things. There's heat. And my, and they, it's like two trees that have grown so closely together. It looks like one tree. I think it's worthwhile, even though thinking is not good enough, really, but to really think about. Sensation comes. We don't decide when it comes. We don't decide how intense it is. We don't know what it's really made of exactly. Even if we can describe what it's made of, we still don't really get the point. We get to the point. Tasting an apple. Many, many different perceptions. Sound, smell, taste, temperature, etc. Texture. We didn't make up coolness. We didn't make up the sound of crunch and splash and boop. We can describe it and we can feel it and we can notice those are two different things. And that's the beginning. So I think in a practice level, like experiential level, noticing gently, actively. So not an omission, but we keep letting it come across. So we put our feet in the stream, both of them. We feel there's the flash of taste, and there's description of taste, or there's the mind activity around taste. Both happen without our permission, usually. The taste is just wild. It can be that we like it or don't like it unexpectedly. And the more we pay attention to it, the more we find things we like and don't like in that same old taste. And just gradually we get, the impression comes across, like the stream gradually changes the bed, the earth that it's flowing over. We get this, how different it feels, the flash of the direct perception and our version of the apple taste and experience, the mind level. So now that we're not eating apples, so let's come. There's probably an out-breath going to happen sometime soon for everybody, hopefully. Or a left foot. And without getting complicated, just simply feeling there's the flow of direct experience. And there's the flow of the mind version of foot or out-breath. And just to notice that those are two different things is powerful. It's a bit disempowering if we try to stop the mind version flow. But we can tune into the direct perception flow. So it sounds contradictory, but letting ourselves tune into the actual direct perception of left foot or nose or whatever you like. Some part of us, yeah, yum. And just noticing the mind version of foot. It feels kind of comfortable in a certain way, and also dull, not alive. And as we come into the direct perception more, which is a natural process, we can give ourselves permission for that, and then that leap spells everything, leaps into that flow of direct perception, which is flashing, the immediacy. Do you know what I mean? When I'm talking about the flow of direct perception, warm, cool, wet, dry, dense, light, texture, movement. The flash of that now, that happens before I can stop and describe it or comment. Is there any question about that? Sorry? Yes, of course. It's also individual, yes. It's more than individual. Each flash is individual. Each flash is so itself. Completely alive and completely gone. Completely gone. The part of us that can be here, to feel left foot, which then no longer is a left foot, right? There's some warmth, there's some texture, etc. And there isn't my. There's not. My is another thing. My is another flash. My foot. Okay. So for now, we can relax, see how little effort is needed to feel what we feel, whatever it is. But coming towards direct perception more often. So, body experience, colors, sounds, tastes, smells. What is enough again, Andy?
Speak.
What? Must speak.
Must
speak.
Must
speak. Halas. Halas must speak.
Halas.
Bus.
What, everyone's into India? okay. So, as often happens, what I wanted to bring up this evening for a fairly short talk, don't worry, is coming alive. And that's one of the main practices, especially in these first couple of days. It's just letting that actual direct experience have you, like, come across. And simply noticing the difference between when I hear the sound of the air conditioner and the mind has a picture in my closed sort of studio head of an air conditioner. The poor mind is doing its best. It's been told to do that, so it does. An air conditioner? How about this? So there's nothing wrong, okay, but it is different. And we are able to notice that. And by practicing, the noticing gets more easy, and a natural responsiveness to that more alive, more direct experience grows. And it's very joyful, juicy, electric, enlivening. I'm reading a book that I read as a child. One of my friends from this country sent it to that country. And it actually got through the mail. It's the middle of nowhere where I live. So in case you've read the book, The Education of Little Tree, and if you haven't, please do. There's a man in the story, it's a true story, that happened during the Depression time. So 1929, early 30s in the United States. There's a man who was in his 80s and very big, tall. And he lived in a small wooden house that he built for himself on a really steep mountain, far from people. His name is Willow John. Willow is a kind of tree. Willow John. He had long white braids. And he did everything for himself. The firewood and cooking, hunting. He was from a people called Cherokee people, who had gotten sent west. And so he walked there, and then he came back walking 3 years later. It was supposed to be called the Nations, because all the nations that lived in the eastern part of the country where I was born were sent there, so all those nations can go over there. And so he said he went walking to the Nations, and he came back because there was no nation. But he came back with, they say in the book, his eyes were dead. And they describe how the dead eyes look. So this is a man who lived like a seemingly very alive life in nature, in tune with his environment. But even his beloved friends see his eyes dead. And they say, it's like you couldn't tell if he's just looking right past you. But he wasn't looking at you or into you. And I want to tell the story of how his eyes came back alive. There were three other Cherokee people that would come walking hours from the other side, and every Sunday they would meet under the tree outside the church, and they would hug, long, long hug, and they would share, and they would go into the church last, and they would sit in the back, and then they would share their lunch, and they would go home. Walking a few hours. They said they would button the top button of the shirt to be proper for church. And one Sunday, in the place where one of the three, little tree, the boy who was about six, came to his place in the church, and there was a gift for him. It was an Indian knife that was for him. And the way they gave wasn't to give to you, that you know I'm giving to you. It's in your place. And it's for you. And Little Tree, the little six-year-old boy, was so happy. And the gratitude moved him to find what he could give to Willow John. He knew Willow John had given him the knife. And so the main present that he thought of was, do you know what a bullfrog is? Bullfrog? Frog? Bullfrog. Big one. Okay? And he was friends with the frog in the stream near his own house, Little Tree was. And he made sure that that frog, which was already a big frog, got extra food. He fed the bullfrog, so it was like a big bullfrog. And that was the gift, so he brought that to the church. And because you don't give it to the person, you leave it for them. So they met under the tree. Willow John had on his coat, he always took off his coat and hung it in the tree while they talked. Put it back on to go back in the church. So, of course, the only place to leave it for him is in his pocket. The pocket of the jacket is the perfect place for the bullfrog. That's how big Willow John was. His pocket was big enough for that big bullfrog. And they hugged long, and they talked, and they got ready, and they went into the church. And whatever they call the guy at the front, which even in that story, there was a big debate what to call the guy at the front of the church, Reverend or Mister. So I'm going to call him the guy at the front of the church. He started out his routine by saying, Dear Lord. And then the bullfrog started out his thing, which is more like very, very loud from the back of the church. Someone ran out of the church. Someone started crying. Someone started screaming because they didn't have, of course, any idea what it was. But Willow John realized what it was and started laughing and laughing. And he stood up laughing, and then he sat down in the back of the church laughing and crying. And the whole church was silent, just letting him cry. and laugh. And that's when they first saw the first spark back in Willow John's eyes. And from there, it came all the way back. So you can just feel the feeling of a man as big as a tree almost, that walked and found there was no nation and came back, laughing at the back of the church. There were only three Cherokee in the church building, and one of them was sitting on the floor laughing, as big as a tree. So it's about finding our way, not just coming home, but really coming home, including to each other. And including inside ourselves, inside yourself. Letting things come home to each other. So in that kind of way, that when the gift is lying there, you know it's for you. And you accept. Because there is a gift lying there for you. And we're scared to accept it. Practicing love gradually grows that we finally accept it. So especially love, I mean love of aliveness. But that includes love of yourself, each other, and what you love, which is your weight. And you can kind of feel towards our way by feeling when things get all complicated, like, oh, that can't be for me, or maybe it's for me. It's for you. Just the simplicity. Not letting complication be an escape. And then allowing the further step. Accepting the gift of your precious life, yours, and not yours. Accepting the gift lying there, lying here. Gratitude happens. And some really crazy idea comes from there. Some really innocent gesture comes out of that. It's not trying to look crazy. It doesn't realize that it's crazy. Yeah. That gratitude. Little Tree wasn't trying to make a scene in the church by feeding the bullfrog and bringing it and putting it in the pocket. It's harder for us because we can think of all that might become a scene and how good or bad that would be and so on and the complicated. But if we could still give the frog, like feed the frog and give the frog. And then what happens next? Part of what happens is a little bit like Little Tree's life. He's living with his grandparents because his parents had died. and just living together, doing together. When they would go work with the hay or the corn, there were always hickory nuts around the edges. They would gather those too, and they wouldn't get so much done with the hay. They would have a good day, and they would have a lot of hickory nuts. A lot of rich life experience. And just, if you could get the feeling of how happy the child is to be with the grandparents in the middle of all that life, in the middle of all that forest, all those creatures, and how happy the grandparents are to be living with the boy in the middle of all those creatures and forests, and how happy the forest is. So inside you, that starts to happen, and we can just give a little support. The little child comes along and is so happy to be included. And it looks like the child's being put to work almost. The child loves learning, loves being part of it. Your child, that part that didn't get to grow up. It's not a hard job. It's a little scary. Another interesting, important thing that happens as we come in to ourselves and find out at home, there's a gift here. And there's giving also. There's a gift and there's giving. You can say that's a mode of being here, is when we recognize that this is a gift, being alive. Life is a gift. And in that same place, there's giving. In that home, we start to find that what we long for, what we feel missing, what we want, there's a way that we are the answer. So I just was talking to a friend the other day, and she was kind of laughing at and with herself, and also feeling a little confused and a little embarrassed, because she had this great insight that she was really enjoying feeling intimacy with friends, feeling really close, listening with friends, being with friends. And she's feeling a calling in that direction. She's feeling like that was her growing edge. And by going with that feeling, this is my growing edge, this is an important part of my practice and my spiritual path, she came to this insight, this realization, I am the connection. So the sense of not needing someone else to be there for me to feel intimacy with them. Yeah? I am the connection. The connection is my growing engine. That's me. And she was like, so happy. Kind of sharing it and like, kind of a little, not proclaiming, but like, wow. The triumph of that insight. And the next day, when she was feeling a little lonely, wishing somebody would be there for some company, at first she was confused, thinking, oh, did it, what happened there? Where's the I'm the connection thing? Because our logical thinking would say, I'm the connection, I'm done. I don't have to deal with those people anymore. But what actually happens is something else. We discover I'm the connection. There's enoughness here. All the love in the world, this force is right here. And that allows me to feel an even more, a deeper opening towards other people. And to be able to feel that human need for company as a growing step for her. And so it sounds contradictory, and it isn't. It's a growing step. So I just want to tell one more little part of the story about Willow John and Little Tree. If I could maybe tell it from the beginning. Maybe another night. I would cry a lot. So would you. We'll see. Can't promise. And the reason for telling this story, which is going to be short, don't worry. We have just like about 2 minutes left. Is here we're coming into stillness and quietness. And even in the walking meditation, a sense of really coming into stillness inside while the body's moving. And we're coming to less busyness. And it could be easy to think that we're all about non-doing or doing nothing. And that can and should bring up some question marks. So one time a terrible thing happened, as they do. And one evening, two people came to the little cabin where Little Tree lived with his grandparents at that time. And they had their buttons buttoned up to the top. They had a paper that the grandmother could read by the lamplight. And she started reading it out loud, and then she stopped. And she finished reading it to herself, and then she blew out the lamp and didn't say a word. And everybody kind of knew what that meant, and the people that were buttoned up left. But when they left, they said, "You have 3 days." And what was happening is that someone had decided that the little boy was being exploited by his grandparents and he had to go to an orphanage. And when the grandfather went to the lawyer said, "I'm really sorry, it will waste your money if you pay me. They'll take the boy." There's a good ending. Wait. Yeah. And he was there for a while. And we won't go into that right now. And he had a friend. He had a friend who was a boy, and he had a friend who was a tree. And he had a friend who was a star that they'd all agreed to look at in the evening. They call it the dog star. And at a certain point, Little Tree knew, "I want to go home." And so whenever they met, looking at the dog star, from a distance they met, looking at the dog star. And Little Tree refused any connection other than, "I want to come home." And Willow John got the message. So they were completely helpless. The government had taken the boy away, and that was supposed to be that. One day, Little Tree saw someone that looked like his granddad, and he went running. "Grandpa, it's me." "Little Tree." Nothing. The man didn't turn around. And it turned out that it wasn't his grandpa, but it was Willow John. And Willow John had come walking all the way from his high house on the mountain to the orphanage and into the office of that other guy that was standing at the front of the church, whatever we want to call him. And said, "Little Tree must go home." And he didn't get the answer he wanted, so he came back the next day and said, "Little Tree must go home." And he still, Willow John didn't hear what he needed to hear, and so he came back again and said, Little Tree must go home. And then he started following the guy around. Little Tree must go home. And so this guy with the buttons up was completely freaked out and signed the papers for Little Tree to go home. And he did go home. And it was winter time, it was Christmas Day actually, I think, and when they got home, the trees were touching Little Tree's face, making sure it was him. And he fell in the creek, and they all jumped in the creek in December, throwing the water in the air. So sometimes, even when we feel helpless and we feel we just have to accept something that's impossible, something else moves and finds a way. It's not the normal, but it's a way. So coming to stillness and quiet doesn't mean never letting yourself respond and find a way. Just the opposite. The more we come into stillness and quiet, the more responsiveness gets wide and strong. May all beings live in harmony, fulfilled in joy. Liberated. May our practice and our lives devote themselves into the momentum for liberation.